KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimmigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a bartender. The Palouf Harbor Tribe is looking for an environmental coordinator. EATS is hiring a behavior health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They are also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. And today is March 27th, 2025. Happy birthday to Colin Smith. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sidkinap to Castle Cape, gale warning tonight and Friday. Today, northwest winds 30 knots, gusts to 45 out of bays and passes, seas at 5 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 35 knots, gusts to 50 out of bays and passes, seas at 6 feet with freezing spray. And Friday, northwest winds 40 knots, gusts to 55 out of bays and passes, seas at 6 feet with freezing spray. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, gale warning Friday. Today, northwest winds 30 knots, gusts to 50 out of bays and passes, seas at 3 feet with freezing spray. Tonight, northwest winds 30 knots, gusts to 50 out of bays and passes, seas at 3 feet with freezing spray. And Friday, northwest winds 35 knots, gusts to 50 out of bays and passes, seas at 4 feet with freezing spray. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, gale warning through Friday. Today, northwest winds 25 knots, increasing to 35 in the afternoon, gusts to 50 out of bays and passes, seas at 5 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 40 knots, seas at 5 feet. And Friday, northwest winds 40 knots, gusts to 55 out of bays and passes, seas at 5 feet. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, small craft advisory through Friday. Today, northwest winds 25 knots, seas 8 feet with freezing spray. Tonight, north winds 30 knots, seas 9 feet with freezing spray. And Friday, north winds 30 knots, seas at 10 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, small craft advisory through Friday. Today, northwest winds 20 knots, becoming north 30 in the afternoon, seas at 8 feet with freezing spray. Tonight, north winds 30 knots, seas at 11 feet with freezing spray. And Friday, north winds 30 knots, seas at 11 feet with freezing spray. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, partly sunny with scattered snow showers. Highs in the upper 20s. Northwest winds 20 to 35 miles per hour with gusts to 45, increasing to 55 in the afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers. Lows in the mid-20s. North winds 25 to 40 miles per hour with gusts to 60. And Friday, partly cloudy. Isolated snow showers in the morning. Highs around 30. North winds 25 to 40 miles per hour with gusts to 60. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a high tide at 1:59 a.m. at 6 feet 4 inches. A low tide at 7:42 a.m. at 1 foot 7 inches. A high tide at 1:41 p.m. at 7 foot 2 inches. And a low tonight at 8:08, a minus tide of 2 inches. Your sun rose at 8:24 this morning, and your sun will set at 9:10, giving us 12 hours and 46 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, lawyers present their opening statements in the trial for a 2019 Mount Ballyhoo car crash case. And Unalaska birders hit the streets to document the island's wildlife. Stay tuned.
ALYU is proud to sponsor the stories and voices that connect our community. ALYU is committed to building a stronger future for our region. To learn more about ALYU's commitment for a stronger future, visit alucorp.com.
Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in. It's Thursday, March 27th, 2025. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from Unalaska. It's been nearly 6 years since two Unalaska teens died in a crash on Mount Ballyhoo. Yesterday marked the start of the trial in Anchorage for the young man who survived the incident. Dustin Ruckman is facing two counts of criminally negligent homicide, one for the death of 16-year-old Carly McDonald and another for the death of 18-year-old Kiara Renteria Haste. Attorneys representing the state and the defense presented their opening statements for the trial yesterday. They described a similar event in which Ruckman, who was 18 years old at the time, drove up on Alaska's Mount Ballyhoo with the two girls inside the truck. At one point, his vehicle fell down the Ulacta Head cliff side of the mountain and plummeted about 900 feet to the rocky beach below. Ruckman told police he was thrown from the truck and escaped with minor injuries. The two girls died in the crash after being ejected from the truck. State Prosecutor Patrick McKay Jr. began the trial process with his opening statement. He told the jury that Ruckman's choice to take the girls up to the dangerous area was a direct cause of their deaths. Defense lawyer Julia Mowdy is representing Ruckman. In her opening statement, she focused on the lack of characterization of the area as dangerous. She also says that Ruckman has been considered a scapegoat in the incident. She told the court the community has tried to make sense of the tragedy, and Ruckman's only guilt is that he survived the crash. The jury heard from various witnesses who were the first to see Ruckman after the incident. They also saw drone footage and photographs of the area and the wreckage. The trial is expected to run for a couple more weeks. It's being live-streamed on the Alaska Courts website at stream.akcourts.gov. The Great Backyard Bird Count is a day in mid-February when birders around the world venture out into their neighborhoods to count and record every bird they can spot. KUCB's Sophia Stewart Rossi joined Unalaskans as they tallied their feathered friends.
It's a cold and windy winter day on Amaknak Island. Megan Dean is leading a group of local birders outside along Alulik Harbor. She's with the Museum of the Aleutians.
I know, between the wind and the sun, my eyes are like watering.
Dean is using binoculars looking out across the water. Soon she spots a group of black and white ducks. The birds are bobbing up and down on the waves, and they aren't that easy to identify because there are a lot of different black and white ducks in the Aleutian region. So knowing the fine details to separate them all becomes crucial. Dean has ID books and brochures to help participants in the group decipher what species the birds are.
I'm kind of more of like a pelican and flamingo girl. Like I want an odd-shaped, very large duck or bird that's
to
like,
identify? Yeah. The group ranges from toddlers to seniors. This one-day global bird count event helps scientists track bird populations just before their spring migration begins. It's a program run by Cornell Lab, Audubon Society, and Bird Studies Canada. Today, the Unalaska birders count 16 bird species, including four common ravens, which is exciting to see as their population has drastically decreased in the last couple of years for unknown reasons. But Dean was on the hunt for another bird today. She's looking for a canvasback duck, a species a fellow birder found earlier that day.
So it's like another Oreo duck.
Oh.
But it's a little more white than the Scots, and it's got a brown head, and it's got a different color beak and kind of a different shape beak. It's more of like a Roman nose.
Once the birds are counted, Dean records the sightings in the eBird app, so birders and scientists around the world can see what birds are hanging out in Unalaska on February 15th. For some places in the world, it's competitive.
Colombia, we learned, is currently in the count of counting the most birds.
Oh, interesting.
The results of Unalaska's Great Backyard Bird Count can be found at birdcount.org. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
State lawmakers are now more than halfway through their four-month legislative session, and time is ticking away. The Alaska House and Senate are both controlled by bipartisan caucuses made up mostly of Democrats. Coming into the session, the two caucuses looked like they were aligned on many key issues. They each said they wanted to boost education funding, improve the state's retirement system, and, of course, pass a balanced budget. But the devil is always in the details, and fractures are starting to show as legislators work toward a final budget. Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove spoke with Capitol reporter Eric Stone for an update on where things stand in Juneau.
We're coming up at the end of March, and that means the complicated, time-consuming process of writing the budget is well underway. But looming over all of this is the fact that lower oil prices mean that lawmakers are facing deficits. And, you know, unlike the U.S. Congress, the state constitution actually requires the legislature to balance the budget every year. So current estimates for a status quo budget put it hundreds of millions of dollars underwater. So that's basically the same education funding as last year, plus a roughly $1,400 permanent fund dividend. Thing is, though, there is a lot that the majorities want to add. The biggest part of that, of course, is the boost to state education funding that the House passed earlier this month. And how to pay for that is not exactly clear.
Yeah, so how could lawmakers pay for that funding boost and balance the budget?
So there are a few different levers that lawmakers could pull to balance the budget. There are three main ones, I would say. They could raise taxes or, you know, find some other revenue. They could draw from a state savings account, or they could cut the permanent fund dividend to balance the budget. Actually, there is a fourth. They could significantly cut back on state services. But, you know, every single one of those is facing opposition from somewhere. I'll go kind of in reverse order here. Budget cuts are on the table, but, you know, some of the key budgeters say that after years of relative austerity, there isn't a whole lot left to cut. House members are talking about, you know, cutting spending somewhere, maybe some of the governor's increases, but it's unclear, you know, where that will land as I talk to you now. Okay, so next, cutting the PFD, that is never popular. In the last couple of years, it's become something of a tradition to have the quarter of the legislature's annual draw from the permanent fund be set aside for dividends. That is, you know, that sort of results in the $1,400 figure I referenced earlier. Senators have been hesitant to go much lower than that. You know, it's a pretty important part of a lot of people's income. But this week, we did see some softening. In a news conference, some key senators expressed some flexibility on maybe reducing the PFD to about $1,000. They've also floated repeatedly cutting back on that education funding boost the House passed. They're floating cutting back on it by about a third. That gets you a lot of the way there to balancing the budget, but, you know, not quite.
Not quite, but you mentioned two other options, raising revenue or taking the deficit from savings. What about that?
Okay, so those are another two where they're kind of at loggerheads here. You know, Senate President Gary Stevens, he's a Kodiak Republican, he said at the beginning of the session that drawing from savings was off the table. He even chastised the editor of the Juneau Empire for asking him about it repeatedly. Well, so this week, Stevens actually apologized to the editor of the Empire, and he said the Senate was, after all, looking at drawing from savings to cover the portion of the deficit that covers the current year. Here's how he put it.
Times change, things change, and sometimes you have to eat crow up here.
But Senator Lyman Hoffman, he's the Finance Committee co-chair in the Senate, he says he doesn't think senators are interested in drawing from savings for the next year, and that's the real meat of the budget, you know, what happens, you know, from July 1st to June 30th. Hoffman and the rest of the Senate majority have been emphasizing revenue bills as a way to pay for, you know, the things that the House and the Senate want to do. There are three major ones in the Senate right now. They're basically changes to oil taxes and corporate income taxes. But again, you know, there is a catch. The House has a one-vote majority. It's 21-19 over there. And just recently, House Majority Leader Chuck Kopp, he's an Anchorage Republican, and he signed on to an op-ed opposing oil taxes that included most of the minority Republicans in the House. So that means that even if every member of the majority voted for all these taxes, and there's no guarantee that they would, they could not pass without some Republican minority help. Kopp says, you know, for his part, he'd like to balance the budget using some of the other mechanisms we just talked about, like, you know, using savings in the Constitutional Budget Reserve or CBR.
Yes, we have to do a CBR draw. Yes, we have to pay the dividend we can afford. No, we don't have to do it by raising taxes on entities and persons. Not this year.
And that is basically where things stand.
Okay, well, how are they going to resolve this?
Well, you know, that's anybody's guess at this point. There is some, even some special session chatter going around right now. Hoffman, though, the Senate Finance Co-Chair, he says it's unlikely that any extra time would actually result in, you know, some breakthrough.
I've been trying to impress upon my colleagues that the numbers don't change, but if we don't come up with a solution, it can ruin your summers.
Leaders on the House side, for their part, they say nobody's too dug in at this point, and, you know, for that reason, they're optimistic, too. But, of course, we'll have to wait and see.
A beloved local event is scheduled to take place this weekend. It's USAFE's annual Soup Off. KUCB spoke with USAFE Director Emlyn Crane.
Well, USAFE stands for Unalaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, and we have been around since, I think, about 1982. And we provide services to people who've been impacted by domestic or sexual violence, including child abuse, elder abuse, stalking, other interpersonal violent crime. We also help people with things like food insecurity or people that are maybe having trouble falling behind in their utilities or something. We might be able to help out with that temporarily. There's some criteria that they have to meet, obviously. Generally, just helping people access resources maybe that aren't always that easy to access from here. We're kind of a catch-all social service agency because for a long time there weren't that many social services here, so people in crisis tend to reach out to us, and then we try to help them figure out where they can go to get what they need. I've been at USAFE since 1997 as a paid employee. I was a volunteer for several years before that, and we've done the Soup Off every year that I've been there, but it's been almost a continuous yearly event every year. It's fun because people are very creative in the entries that they bring for the Soup Off. It gets a little competitive. I think winning the Soup Off is kind of a badge of honor for people. And we always have such tremendous community support of, you know, items and services donated for our auctions and for door prizes that it just makes it a really lively event. So it's going to take place Saturday, March 29th. There are 5 soup categories this year. The first one is sort of the general category, which is soups, stews, and chowders. Second is seafood. The third is vegetarian. The fourth is chili. And the fifth is world flavors. There will also be a prize for best presentation. And the main difference this year is that we're asking people to please bring their soups or chilies in a crock pot. We used to try to keep stuff warm without a crock pot, but it just never worked out very well, so we're not doing that anymore. So if you don't have a crock pot, I'm sure you can borrow one from someone in town. I've got a couple I could loan out if you need to borrow one, so just give me a call. And the schedule goes like this. Saturday, March 29, high school small gym. Between 4 and 5:30, bring your soups to the small gym. From 5:30 to 6:15 p.m., the soup judging is happening. We aim to start dinner at 6:15. At 6:30, we'll hold our board election, and at 6:45, we plan to start our auction. So we'll have a live auction and a silent auction, and the live auction goes on until it's over. So we're hoping to be done by 8:30 or so. The cost to either attend the soup off or to enter a soup, and it's whether you enter one soup or three, it's the same price. Elders 6'5 and over are free. Students 18 and under are $10. A single person is $15, a couple is $25, family is $40, supporting is $50, and sustaining is $100. We will also have door prizes. You get a couple free door prize tickets with each membership. It goes up the more value of the membership that you buy. But you can also buy door prize tickets as well to increase your chances of winning something.
That was Emlyn Crane talking to KUCB about the upcoming Soup Off event. You can hear the full interview on Friday at noon and Saturday afternoon at 4. The Soup Off will take place at the school small gym this Saturday. That's the 29th. Bring your soup between 4 o'clock and 5:30. Dinner starts at 6:15, and stick around for an auction starting at 6:45. Child care will be provided at the event by UCSD's band program. For more information on USAFE and the services they provide, call 907-581-1500. The Tustamina used to sail twice a month to Unalaska and the Aleutians Eastboro, but it's been down to once a month since the pandemic. Now the state is making its plan for the next 20 years, and it looks like the chain run will stick to once-a-month service during the summer, and the state is looking for public input. Sunday is the deadline for the public to comment on the Alaska Marine Highway System's long-range service plan. The plan schedules one port call a month to Unalaska during the summer season, with no commitment to increase service beyond that. The ferry system says they're taking community input into consideration, but the window to do so is closing fast. Sunday is the last day to submit your comments. You can do so at dot.alaska.gov/AMHS. Here's a look at what's happening in Unalaska this week. The Museum of the Aleutians is hosting its monthly trivia night tonight, starting at 6:30 at the Norwegian Rat Saloon. This free event involves 5 rounds of pub trivia and a raffle. A youth swim league meet takes place Saturday morning at the Aquatic Center, starting at 10. The Unalaska Teen Council is hosting a Midnight Madness event at the community center Saturday evening. That runs from 8 to midnight. Teens in grades 6 through 12 are invited to take part in games, crafts, food, and fun. For more information on these events and everything else coming up, check out your community calendar at kucb.org. And tune in tomorrow at noon and 5 right here at KUCB for a new episode of the Bering Sea Barometer. Reel in the real-life experiences of fishing the Bering Sea with your host, Captain Pete Nathan. Be sure to check out our other new series, too. It's called Amplifying the Aleutians. We interview longtime Channel 8 TV and KUCB alums for a glimpse into the history of the station and, by extension, Unalaska itself. Find all episodes of both shows on our website and on Spotify. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at kucb.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you Monday.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Sitka's commercial herring fishery is smaller this year, and that means fishery reports from the state will be restricted. As reported by KCAW's Catherine Rose at an informational meeting on March 19th, area management biologist Aaron Dupuis said that fewer than 3 processors and a limited fleet are participating this year. Dupuis said the low participation means they cannot release harvest data to the public. The Alaska law, which exists for all fisheries, says that the state can release confidential fish ticket data if more than 3 entities are involved in the fishery.
Because we will have less than 3 processors this year. I think this is the first time ever in the history of the Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery. But because of the number of processors, harvest data will be confidential from this year. That's state law. There's no way around it. Wish it were different sometimes, but harvest information will be confidential this year.
Dupuis says he thinks the fishery, with its limited capacity, could harvest around 1,000 tons per day this year, which is relatively normal for recent years. But the state won't be sharing the daily catch information or the total tonnage of herring harvested at the end of the season. Harvest data is a carefully followed metric in the controversial fishery. Herring eggs have been a highly valued traditional food source for Alaska Native people for thousands of years, and traditional harvesters have called for more conservative management of the commercial fishery for decades. In last year's fishery, the state set the highest ever harvest rate at over 80,000 tons. That number was later called into question after the state released a report acknowledging that it was based on a population estimate nearly double the actual population of fish. However, fishermen only harvested around 12,000 tons, pointing to lower participation and market demand than previous years, even though state data shows the fish population is doing well.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Cook Inlet's East Side Set Net Fishery won't get to use beach seines this summer following a vote by the Alaska Board of Fisheries on March 15th. As KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports, the vote is a blow to some permit holders who'd hoped the gear would open new fishing opportunities this season.
In recent years, Low King salmon runs have restricted fishing opportunities for more than 400 permit holders, and for the last 2 years, that's meant no fishing season. That's what prompted Brian and Lisa Gabriel to try something new. Using a special permit from the state's Department of Fish and Game Commissioner, they experimented with beach seines last summer. Their goal was to figure out whether the new gear type would let them harvest sockeye salmon while not harming king salmon.
We did that test and we had very good results.
That's Brian, who's also the mayor of Kenai and has been set netting since the 1980s. Of the more than 15,000 salmon the Gabriels caught with their set beach seine last summer, just 13 were king salmon. All were released alive back into Cook Inlet. Gary Hollier is another longtime East Side set netter who experimented with beach seines last summer. He reported similar results to the board last week. No kings killed.
The Department of Fish and Game and the Board of Fish is asked the set net fleet to come up with some way to harvest sockeye and not kill kings. Beach seining is the simplest and most cost-effective way to achieve those two goals.
So, the Gabriels brought their results to the State Board of Fisheries, which met in Anchorage last week. It isn't normally when board members would consider a proposal like this, but the Gabriels last fall successfully got on the agenda as an out-of-cycle request. The Gabriels wanted the board to add beach seines to the type of fishing gear allowed under a new management plan for the Kenai River's late-run king salmon fishery. State board members approved the plan last year. Here's Brian again.
What that did for us as set netters is it put us where we weren't allowed to fish with our set nets unless we hit a target of 14,250.
That's 14,250 large king salmon. State data show runs haven't hit that target in recent seasons. Last year, the cumulative king run was just over 6,600 fish. For set netters wanting to fish, those numbers don't indicate great odds. The board said it received about 150 public comments in support of adding beach seines to set netters' toolbox when king runs are low. At the same time the board adopted a more restrictive plan for late-run Kenai River kings, they newly allowed set netters to fish commercially with dip nets, like those used during the Kenai and Kisilof Rivers' popular personal use fishery. Through the proposals submitted last week, the Gabriels asked for permission to use dip nets and their set beach seines. Multiple board members, like Anchorage Representative Curtis Chamberlain, said the results of the Gabriels' experimental fishery were encouraging. Others said more data is needed before they'd vote to approve beach seines for the whole fishery.
I firmly believe it is in the best interest of the stock, and that's who our duty is to. And I feel that this leads to a necessary evolution in fishing technique and responsible fisheries management for the best interest of this stock.
But the question ultimately put before board members wasn't the one asked by the Gabriels. Three board members advanced a significant rewrite of the proposal that would have struck set nets entirely from the list of fishing gear allowed in Cook Inlet. regardless of king runs, and it would have only allowed beach seines when king runs got above that 14,250 level. Realizing the rewrite put all set nets at risk, the Gabriel switched quickly from lobbying for their proposal to lobbying against it.
You know, at that point, we just wanted to kill it because, you know, we felt that it violated the public notice. I mean, there's literally, you know, over 400, you know, Eastside set net permit holders that aren't at this meeting to defend them losing their gill nets.
Some board members said the debate over spiking set nets belonged at the next Cook Inlet meeting in 2027. Others suggested there might not be a future for set nets in the inlet. The written proposal failed on a tie 3-3 vote. Mike Woods, who set nets commercially, recused himself from voting. After all was said and done, set netters walked away from last week's meetings with no new beach seine permissions and after almost losing their principal gear type entirely. Now, the ball is largely in the court of Alaska Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang. He said Wednesday he's cautiously optimistic about the results of the Gabriel's experiment, but he agrees more data is needed.
I think they demonstrated this gear has the potential of selectively harvesting sockeye salmon with low impact to Chinook salmon, but I think before we get into a point where we're going to just legalize that fishery across the broad geography of the Eastside set net fishery, we need to do a little bit more work.
Vincent Lang says his next steps include figuring out how to best issue more special permits to help fill in data gaps, the biggest one being how representative the Gabriel's data is of other fishery sites. And as he brainstorms what the next round of special permits could look like, he says he'll work with the state law department to do so in a way that doesn't go against the board's intent. For their part, Brian and Lisa Gabriel say they're up to the challenge of collecting more data. Here's Lisa.
This board has told us that they want more data, so we're going to make sure that data is there and it's complete.
But they say they're concerned about some of the board's rhetoric regarding set nets.
Just to be told that we are put on notice for our next meeting, that they are basically going after our gill nets, I think that's pretty interesting, bold strategy.
Looking farther ahead, Vincent Lang says he shares some board members' concerns about the long-term future of set gill nets in Cook Inlet.
When you have a gear type that's non-discriminatory, I mean, it's just that isn't selective to a certain species, you end up with concerns. So right now, the board made that decision. We're abiding by that decision, and the board can make another decision in 2 years from now. Whatever they want to do, that's their decision. But we are going to continue to manage that fishery based on the action plan, which basically doesn't provide any set net opportunity.
All versions of the beach seine proposal, the Gabriel's final report, and recordings of the Board of Fisheries meetings can be accessed on the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website. Reporting in Soldotna, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The Alaska seafood industry says it's getting crushed by unfair trade, and tariffs are part of the problem. The Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee reports that industry groups are urging the federal government to push back against international competition they say doesn't play by the rules.
Two major Alaska seafood trade groups are sounding the alarm. The At-Sea Processors Association and Pacific Seafood Processors Association earlier this month sent a letter to the Trump administration warning against hardline trade policies. They say new tariffs could trigger retaliation. The At-Sea Processors Association represents most of the vessels that catch and process pollock in the Bering Sea. CEO Matt Tinning says all of these disputes threaten Alaska seafood, which is already at a disadvantage.
We also face unfair competition in global markets. Unfair competition from low-cost producers who aren't held to appropriate labor and environmental standards. In the seafood space, the worst offender is Russia.
Russian seafood has flooded markets in recent years. And while the Biden administration closed a loophole that allowed Russian fish into the U.S. market, American producers are still struggling to compete overseas. Existing tariffs are part of that struggle. Alaska seafood was hit pretty hard during the 2018 trade war with China, which still has tariffs in place on U.S. seafood. And earlier this month, China announced an additional 10% tariff in response to the new tariffs Trump imposed days before. The European Union, one of Alaska's biggest export markets, also continues to impose tariffs from the last trade war, even as their own products enter the U.S. duty-free. In their letter, the two Alaska trade groups warn about further retaliation. Tinning says they aren't necessarily opposed to reciprocal tariffs, but the industry is particularly fragile, exporting about two-thirds of what it produces, so they're vulnerable to trade tensions.
And so we really do live and die by fair access to those export markets.
The trade groups also raised concerns about labeling rules in the European Union, where Russian caught pollock is sometimes sold as Alaska pollock, even if it was caught and processed entirely outside the U.S. They say the combination of foreign tariffs, labeling confusion, and global overproduction could push the already struggling sector to the brink, especially if retaliatory tariffs from countries like China or Canada once again target U.S. seafood. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
We'll be right back. jump up. Get it. Hey.
Devil with a bluegrass, bluegrass, bluegrass. Devil with a bluegrass song.
Ooh, yeah. Bum. Looking mighty now, here she come. Wearing a wig, hat, and shades to match. Got her high-heeled shoes and an alligator hat. Wearing her pearls and a diamond ring. Got rings, it's on her finger now and everything. Devil with a bluegrass on. She's the devil with a bluegrass on. Low, hip her. Chanel number 5. Got to be the finest girl alive. You walk real cool, catches everybody's eye. I got to be nervous, I can't say hi. Not too skinny, she's not too fat. She's a real pump singer and I like her mighty fat. Devil with a bluegrass on. She's the devil with a bluegrass on. Hey, I say now. Devil with a bluegrass on. Yeah, the devil with a bluegrass on. Gonna sock it to me now.
Inside my car, I got pictures, got candy. I'm a lovable man, and I can take you to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman. By now, I'm sure you know that I love you,
love you.
I need you,
need you.
I want you, got to have you tried. Great God in heaven, you know I love. And you know I love. Baby, I'll take you anywhere.
heaven, you know I love you.
Just crossed my mind. train, partnered at 2 ears, on the wrong track and headed for you. Driving that train, pound cocaine, Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind, and you know that notion just crossed my mind.
Funding for KSDP is made possible in part by the King Cove Corporation, operating the Fleets, In Hotel, the Heart Lakes Apartments, and the Last Hook Off Tavern. The King Cove Corporation is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
Get back to where you once belonged. Now get back.
but I just can't get no relief, Lord. Somebody, ooh, somebody, can anybody find me somebody to love? Yeah. I work,
he works hard
every day of my life. I work till I ache my bones at the end. Take home my heart away. Oh,
goes on,
I'm tired out. My knees, my eyes, right away. Till the tears